Space for radical politics in an era of extreme inequality. Tomorrow, we hope to be bringing you the results of the Iowa caucus.
Did you know? Planned Parenthood Hudson Pequannock is now offering gender-affirming health services. They're offering hormone therapy for individuals aged 18 and over, self-injection trainings, sensitive sexual and reproductive health care, and resources and referrals for primary care, mental health, surgery, dental care, legal services, and support groups. Call 1-800-230-PLAN for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen, our oceans are in trouble. Careless activities by people at sea and on land have created the dire state of the oceans today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. Want to just come in early?
Yeah.
My CD player's not up to the task tonight.
Well, I think it's just giving up on this presidency.
I thought it was a new CD player too, but apparently not. Well, maybe it was designed by one of them app developers. Who knows? That's a shame, though. You know, we put so much work into this.
This theme only lasts one presidency, so.
Well, it's going to last the whole hour if it keeps stopping every 2 seconds.
It's foreshadowing. That's,
you know, it never happens with vinyl. It never happens with vinyl. It just works, you know. And
digital things are fickle. They're
look, I like digital, but I don't like to depend on digital because things like this. Well, actually, this is analog, to be honest. It's playing an analog. The CD playing back is analog.
Right. It's like a PCM wave file, but it's been digitized.
Yeah.
And the data is either there or doesn't. The laser either sees the data or doesn't. And it's just like, it's like kind of in between. It can't really figure out. It knows some of the data is there, but it just keeps looking and then it stops.
It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel here, Kyle over there.
I'm here.
Wow. We're back. We were in the high north of Quebec and Labrador. Labrador, which is technically part of Newfoundland and Labrador. That's the official name of the province.
We went to two provinces.
Yeah, but I'd never been to the land, not the island part of Newfoundland and Labrador, but the land, the Labrador part of Labrador.
Well, I can't say that much.
Yeah, it was something. We took that train. If you listened last week, we were on the train heading to Schefferville. Look it up, Schefferville, Quebec, a town that only has a train connection and an airport, no road. So it was something else.
And let's not dismiss Quebec. I mean, we saw more of that province than ever, and it's
so
incredible.
It's huge.
Massive, and this town is part of it.
And to give you an idea, you know, we took the train up to Montreal, all right, and we spent some days in Montreal. Then we took another train to Quebec, and the Quebec City, that is. And that's 3 hours on the train. And then after that, we rented a car and drove that car 9.5 hours. It should have been 8, but I was scared and it was snowing. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. I pronounce it Sept-Îles, but everybody in Quebec pronounces it Sept-Îles. And they swear they're not inserting another S in there, but they are. Sept-Îles. You hear the S, right?
It's a quick T, and it turns into sort of a subtle S.
How does that happen? But it's not there when you write it out, so I don't know. It's got a dash in it. Some towns get dashes. I don't know why. I don't know why St. John gets spelled out in New Brunswick, but St. John's in Newfoundland is ST period. Explain that to me. I don't get it. Regardless. Okay, 9.5 hours driving to Set Seal, whatever it's called. And then we got on the train for a 13-hour voyage up north to this mysterious town of Schefferville. And where we left the action last week, we were on the train heading up, I think in the latter part of the journey. But, you want to describe what happened afterwards? We were on a very lively train filled with kids who had just competed in some kind of NHL tournament in Set Seal. And it was really, I guess, the highlight of their year because everybody's running around and it was just so active and they were just really into the whole journey.
Yeah, given the amount of time we had to spend just the overnight, it was incredible to see that many people from the area. And, of course, a lot of other people of the hunters that we mentioned were actually from Set Seal. And they were going up for a couple weeks in Labrador to do their hunting. And so it was a very, very lively trip.
More on those hunters later. Yeah, there's more news.
Yeah, the stories just didn't stop. And
We got to know people. I mean, the train had a lot of people on it.
Yes.
In fact, it had as many people on it as I thought lived in that town. I was inadvertently saying the wrong population figures of 200. And there were easily 200 people on the train, I think. You do get to know. I mean, first of all, we're the only people there that clearly didn't come from there. We were the object of much curiosity, and people struck up conversations with us.
Yeah, and we're open to conversation. I think a lot of worker types or others might be nose in a newspaper or book. Well, I was reading books a lot, so I'm just saying that we're gregarious and open to what's going on, and if some funny things happening, of course we're going to be in on that too, because we like good fun every now and then, and yeah, it's just when you're open to things and a simple smile, even across languages, it goes a long, long way.
And just hearing all these kids talking their native language, but then lapsing into either French or English, you were as we were leaving the train when we got to Schefferville, it was really, really exciting in Schefferville because all the kids were arriving back home. And those kids whose parents didn't accompany them on the trip were meeting them in the station. And it was just, it was like a homecoming like you'd never experienced. The station was filled with people. But as we were getting off the train, you were being interrogated by some of these kids. I know one of them asked you where you learned English.
Right. It was really funny just having so much interest and curiosity. And as you said, there's multiple languages, so you're going back and forth a bit, and that really started to make me second guess my own French speaking because I don't get to practice very much. And of course, after the conversations you have, you're always thinking of all the ways you could have described and communicated more detail about having studied or how much you don't get to practice. But suffice to say, I tried as much as I could, but switching back and forth, I think became obvious that I wasn't a native French speaker, but I was speaking it fairly well. And then in English, one of the young people asked me where I learned English, and I don't know what I said. I said from my parents or, kind of a little bit of a joke there. But then it came up that we were from New York City, and then it became more interesting to them what we knew about the big city in the States.
It became a serious matter at that point.
Absolutely. They wanted to know everything. And it was really funny because one of them didn't speak any English and was kind of shy or a little bashful about...
He was angry he didn't know English.
Yeah, wanted to participate in the conversation. And I feel awful because those moments when you're around young people traveling, you want to be able to communicate and be kind of interested and I don't know, not a role model. I'm the furthest thing from a role model, but you want to know what the kids are saying because they know what's going on in any town. I mean, they have their eyes and ears open, and so I know the frustration very well. And to have the reverse where someone wants to be able to talk to you and ask questions, but they're feeling a barrier. I definitely relate with that. And but anyway, the conversation continued, and then they saw all the parents and everybody waving at the station, and of course know exactly who in their family is there and waiting. And there was all kinds of banging on the windows because we're waiting for the queue to get off the train.
Well, from the inside. They weren't banging from the outside.
Yeah, no, they wanted to, you know, wave and be seen as the train was pulling in and people were detraining.
Our theme has limped across the finish line. Congratulations.
Good job, CD. So the last, the very last thing I said to these hockey players that are banging on the windows is "On y va," which is "Let's go," because basically the line had cleared up and they were holding up everybody else trying to get off the train. So I said "On y va," let's go, and it was time, and they jumped out of there.
You know what I realized though during this trip, talking to some of our French friends, French speaking friends in Quebec City. You were saying things in French, but you might have learned Quebec French as opposed to France French, and you know, because of the way you were saying, "Do you speak French?" It's not the way that I was taught how to say it, but they were saying that's correct, and I learned how that version of French coexisted with the French version. Basically, they were isolated back in the centuries ago, and certain words like I think voiture is car. That's what cars were known as overseas. But here, on this continent, what was the word?
Yeah, it's char.
Char.
Our friends used that as an example just when we were having drinks one night,
so
discussing.
They wouldn't get new words. They would make up their own words, I guess, for new things.
I felt like that was an excellent example. Voiture versus char. Char is a variation of chariot. And I thought that was an incredible conversation with some of our friends who were basically reassuring us about some of our French speaking. My thing, as I said, is I'm very rusty, and I think the thing I say the most, or that is my go-to, is that I can speak or that I can hear well, but I speak badly. And mal is like saying malade, like bad. So I speak bad. I don't know. It might be
malade is sick, I think.
Yeah, it's sick. So if je parle très mal is probably not what I think it is, but it's the best I can come up with. I'm sure there's a dozen other ways to say that I'm not a very good French speaker, but it's sort of like self-deprecating and at least an admission that you're not as well-spoken, even if I might be able to fool some people. But the real detail, I think, that had me second-guessing myself, and especially after some of these interactions with young people that are going between two or three languages, you start getting really confused and you're translating in your head and they don't know whether you're speaking English or French and which is better. And so there's all kinds of crazy code switching going on, but also sometimes people give you like perplexed looks, and I don't know if it's because they don't know how to respond or that I'm saying it incorrectly. The particular phrase is, vous parlez français is, or tu parlez français, or vous, both formal and informal.
Tu parles, not tu parlez. Vous parlez, tu parles. How do I know?
Exactly.
I haven't taken French since high school, I think, but...
So I was second-guessing myself because I was saying the formal version, and I wasn't saying it with the right conjugation. Or I was saying it with the right conjugation. So vous parlez is correct, but I was saying it, I think, backwards syntax and with the wrong conjugation. I did correct myself later in the trip. So I was saying, but I was also adding a formal question or a part of the question that you don't have to include, and that is the Parisian version. I believe, or no, it was the Quebec version. I'm not sure. See, I'm getting confused just talking about it.
Added your own little twist to it. So that's important.
Right. So if I'm going to say it, I was saying, est-ce que vous parlez l'anglais?
That's the weird way of saying
that's
it.
That's the weird way of saying it.
But apparently that's correct.
But it is technically correct. So est-ce que is not necessary, and that's what vous parlez français is a short version of. But I think I was also messing up word order, and at least I was second-guessing myself. So I was saying est-ce que vous parlez l'anglais. I might have been saying est-ce que parlez-vous français? So I was saying it backwards. Est-ce que vous parlez français?
All we've gotten to is, do you speak English? Do you speak French?
Exactly.
That's about the limit of what we can say.
But even that, there's like subtle nuance in how you pronounce it. And then, of course, that parler is easy on the end. And if you are using informal, the to, parle, you don't have an EZ, you just have parle. So if I was saying, est-ce que tu parles français or est-ce que tu parles l'anglais, that would have been fine too, but it's informal. So as I'm not a native speaker, I use formal because I want to be polite, I want to be verbose, I want to be making the effort. So I say, est-ce que vous parlez l'anglais? But even that, I was realizing my conjugation was wrong because I was saying parle l'anglais, and you have to pause and hold the L because it's the end of parle, and then l'anglais is L with an apostrophe and anglais. But I was getting that messed up, but I think mid-trip or later in the trip, I corrected myself, and I was saying, est-ce que vous parlez l'anglais?
Did you say l'anglais? Does that mean the English?
Yeah, I don't even
think you need the L apostrophe.
You don't need the L apostrophe.
No, I don't think so.
That's the weirdness, and that's mostly just being a very rusty French speaker. But
thing is, you know, if we were surrounded by this all the time, we might actually be able to communicate with sentences and paragraphs. But since, you know, we're taught to fear languages and not speak them, except for English, then we don't benefit. We don't learn. It's just amazing to see kids that know three languages at the age of 10. That's amazing. And you see that in Europe as well.
Yeah, and I have relatives who are going to be growing up and being able to speak many languages, many more than I grew up with. And I just think it's so crucial to practice, even if you are traveling and talking to strangers, trying to get along and just work on your pronunciation. But the biggest, I think... the biggest problem is none of my friends spoke the language I took. A lot of people in high school and college took Spanish. I took French. And a lot of the people I took those classes with, I didn't really stay in touch with, or I didn't get opportunities to practice with.
Mm-hmm.
But going on trips like this and having conversations and making the effort with acquaintances and stuff along the way, it's at least something. So yeah. If anyone out there wants to be friends and speak French, maybe I'll have even more practice.
You know, we live in New York. We should know French. We border a French-speaking land, Quebec. And of course, we should also know Spanish, and there's no reason not to know Chinese. So, you know, there's a lot of work we have to do, a lot of languages we need to learn. Let's get back to Schefferville, though, because we didn't describe what that was like when we arrived after the mayhem at the train station. We still didn't really have a way to get to where we were staying. And keep in mind, we had to take the train out the next day. Regrettably, we couldn't stay for almost a full week. So we had to take that same train back when it left at 8 in the morning the next day. So we didn't really get to see very much. But just getting to the place we were staying, 2 kilometers away, in minus 24 Celsius temperatures, that was the challenge we were facing. We had tried to make phone calls and arrange this. There doesn't seem to be a taxi service in town, or at least it didn't go to the train station. And we weren't able to reach the place that we were staying, the hotel we had booked. So fortunately, a friend of ours from Quebec was able to get through and made arrangements without our knowledge because we had no phone service. Yeah, in Schefferville, there's no cell phone service either. So we didn't know what to expect. We had already made friends with a lot of people on the train, so we were pretty sure somebody would give us a ride.
Yeah.
But while we were there, somebody just approached us.
Yeah, we were even, as we're getting off and milling around the station with all of these people picking up kids and reuniting, there were already people suggesting, okay, do you need a ride or we can help you find the taxi? But a woman approached us with her daughter and said, are you ready to go? Do you have all your things? And we were like... us? We were like, you know, doing the typical like
who are you?
Turning around, looking behind us. She must be talking to somebody else. But it was in fact someone that was there to pick us up. And as we were talking, someone was offering, do you need a ride? And we're like, no, we're going with this woman. And that person indicated that was in fact the hotel manager.
Yeah, because everybody up there knows each other. So they knew who she was and that we were... in fact, being driven right to the hotel by the hotel managers. Our friend in Quebec had worked that out for us, and it was really a lifesaver. And not only did we get a ride to the hotel, but we had a ride the next morning to get back to the train. And she even offered us breakfast the next day, which we did not think we were going to get. So the little bit we saw of the place was pretty enchanting. I mean, it was covered with snow, very cold. Not as cold as it normally is, though. When I said minus 24, it's usually like minus 35. That's kind of what I wanted to experience. But it just looked like one of these places where, you know, you got to know everybody, and it was kind of cozy, and all kinds of activities that you wouldn't be familiar with here, like, you know, going out into the tundra by snowmobile. And
every driveway had a snowmobile.
They really were
the de facto mode of transportation. Yeah, there's cars in town, but you quickly realize that to do really anything in a climate like that, you must have snowshoes, you must have ski-doos, you must have cold weather gear. All of that stuff is critical. But it was just enough to get a sense of how to get there, the logistics, what it would take to do a longer expedition, or even to use that as a jumping-off point to go even further afield.
Right. Well, we basically, as you said, snowshoes. I mean, I like to wear snowshoes, see what that's like, and just all the other things that that they take for granted up there, riding around on skidoos. But I realized, you know, all the cars up there must have very low mileage because you can't drive anywhere. You can only drive around Schefferville. You can't go anyplace else. So that must be interesting. They probably can keep cars for decades, right?
Yeah, definitely short trips. And I'm sure being a mechanic up there is pretty welcome, because you're not going to be able to go into the city and pick which of your favorite shops to go to. It's probably very critical to keep things maintained, and you definitely wouldn't want to break down, albeit they're short trips. It's probably not too critical to get stranded.
My biggest regret is that we didn't spend a whole lot of time there. And we never got to go to the Blah Blah Cafe, or it's a Cafe Blah Blah. I'm not sure which. It sounds intriguing. It sounds like a really cool place to hang out. And in fact, we even met somebody on the train who was starting work there the next day.
Yeah, I think they were getting a new chef, and he was on his way up to start working there. And it reminded us of so many stories and small towns and places that, yeah, they have to keep staff, keep people working in these places. Otherwise, you know, they don't have a local spot like that.
So we got up early the next morning, had our breakfast, which was amazing. It was the first real food we had had in a couple of days, because we kept arriving in places too late to have things that were fresh. And we basically were stopping at convenience stores and things like that along the way. But we managed to get to the station. We were able to buy our ticket. It was a lot simpler than going up there. We were somewhat familiar with the system. Now, the train is interesting because, first of all, there are no towns between Sept-Îles and Schefferville. And that's about, 350, 400 miles or something?
Yeah, I think it's 394 or something. It's a
lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of wilderness. But the train stops at various places. Some of them have names. Some of them just have mile markers. Everything is a mile marker.
Yeah, they are in miles. That's the increment.
Yeah, and when we got on the train, someone asked us, what mile are you getting off at? Strange question. But what we saw, the train stopped at one of these mile markers. And sometimes there's little tiny huts where people are camped out for a little while, if they're hunters or explorers or something like that.
Camps. They're referred to as camps.
Yeah, camps. So there was one of these places. We didn't see a hut or a house or anything like that, but the train was stopped, and then we saw somebody in a skidoo coming down a trail, and they had a little trailer behind him. And it was weird because they basically handed this orange bag over to the people on the train, and it was a chainsaw. And it was really weird. Somebody came down a trail on a skidoo and handed a chainsaw to the people on the train, who took it, and then the train moved on. It was basically, at that point, the people on the train, because we were sitting in the dining car at that point, on a much quieter train going back because there were no kids on it, they started talking to us, asking us where we were from, and just basically trading all kinds of stories. We asked what the chainsaw was all about, and they said, well, these people last night, they thought they had everything, but they left something on the train, so it got taken off at the next stop, and now we're picking it up and bringing it back to them. So the train is kind of like a shuttle service for delivering things to people that might have misplaced them or not taken them. And so the train stopped at the next assigned mile marker, wherever that was. And we recognized the hunters from the night before. They were the ones who had forgotten their chainsaw. And they saw us from outside, and we all waved at each other. It's just amazing to be able to actually know people up there.
Yeah, we had already met them, and we knew everything they were planning on doing, and that they needed this equipment. My feeling, or my suspicion, is that they had wood there, to keep warm or whatnot, but before they leave, they probably cut some new wood so that there's always a fresh supply at the camp for the next visitor or for when they come back. So they did need that equipment to restock.
Somehow the train going back was faster. I think we got in about an hour and a half earlier than, instead of 13 hours, it was something like 11 and a half hours. I don't know if that was a speed record or what, or if it's just somehow quicker to go back. But you know, we saw a lot of interesting things along the way. Didn't see any moose. I wanted to see a moose, but we didn't.
Well, what we heard is that it's just too cold.
Too cold for moose? Really?
They're more like springtime, you know? They're going around the, you know, fresh vegetation and stuff, but I guess they hunker down or something.
Didn't see any caribou. Didn't see any elk.
No wolves.
No wolves. But we saw a lot of trees, a lot of snow, and at the point where the train used to branch off, there used to be another train that went to Labrador City, a little bit to the west. At that point, you cross over a highway, and that's the only road. And that highway goes from Labrador City to points east, and I'm very intrigued by that road. And I think in the summer or spring or fall, that might be an interesting trip to take. Not the train, but the road. And I wonder if you can take that road. Maybe somebody up there can tell us. If you can take that road all the way to the shore and then get on a boat and go to the island of Newfoundland and explore that way, that would be really awesome to do that. But it's a kind of highway where there aren't very many cars. In fact, we didn't see any. We saw one truck in the distance, but that was it.
Yeah, I have a feeling whatever car we choose should have a steady supply of like spare tires and equipment. I have a feeling even spare fuel is probably something you want to bring on a trek like that. If you're touring, I mean, you're really touring out there, and something breaks down or you, God forbid, hit something or have a flat, you're really on your own or at the mercy of whomever might stumble upon you.
So that was our trip to Northern Quebec and Labrador, and it was in the middle of the winter. It's really pretty cool. Disgusted with the temperatures down here. It's too warm. Where's the snow? Where's winter? I'm not going to get into it now. I'll just get too upset. But, you know, we're at the beginning of February, shortest month, even with the 29 days. Let's get our act together and have some actual winter for a change, because I know I was very disappointed last year. All right. Hey, do you see this letter we got from our friend over in, I don't know how to pronounce this place. It's now I lost. Oh yeah, here it is. Etobicoke. I think it's in Ontario. This is Kirby from Etobicoke. I'm going to say it that way. He was the guy who works in the museum and plays us loud in the mornings when nobody else is around.
Yeah.
Thank you, as always, for taking time each week to make Off the Wall Radio Show. It really gives me hope and happiness to be bombarded by the sound waves of like-minded individuals such as yourselves. If you have been wondering, yes, your voices have been booming and echoing through the cavernous hallways each weekend as I get the museum exhibits ready for the day. And I just wonder how many other people are playing our voices loudly through various caverns and hallways and things like that. I'm sure there are many all throughout the world. Continuing, a couple of weeks ago, after another failed attempt at listener calls, yes, don't remind me, you asked on air that people write in to explain why they don't call. The reason I don't call is because I listen to your show on the weekend following the show's release. I know you asked this half-jokingly, but remember, myself and many others are still out here listening. Yeah, you know, and we have not figured out how to break that time barrier where people from the future can call in and be heard now. There's got to be a way to do it. There's got to be a way.
Something involving like wormholes and black holes and quantum physics. I'm sure there's a way.
And we're on a university where people are studying just that right now. So hopefully we'll have an answer for you at the latest by next month. Continuing, we are out here, my friends. While I enjoy your company on my early, lonely Sunday mornings at work, I think it may be time to start listening to your Off the Wall show live in order to contribute. It is the least I can do. Take care and keep it up. We are still out here. Signed, Kirby. Kirby, thank you so much for that uplifting letter. It does
that's a great idea.
Make us a lot more positive.
Yeah, it could be like something you schedule. Once a month, you listen live. Many people could do this, you know, pick whatever part of the month.
We could assign listeners their particular week, and that's their week to call in and listen live, you know.
Bobson would not have it. Bobson would be so upset.
Bobson used to call in a lot more, you know.
Yeah, he did.
But Bulgaria, it's very difficult, I know, because they're what, like 8 hours ahead of us? It's in the middle of the night, and it's hard to do that. Hey, so we've been away for the entire impeachment trial, and I got to tell you, if you're caught up in all this, it's good to get away sometimes. It's good to get – I mean, we were listening occasionally, but, man, you have to sometimes separate yourself from all the basic craziness that goes on in our culture on an almost daily basis. And, boy, today is certainly no exception to that. Do you realize we have an impeachment trial today? We have the State of the Union tonight. We had what was supposed to be the Iowa caucus last night. You can't take it so seriously that you get upset by it, because this is theater. This is just insane craziness that you'll be telling your great grandkids about someday. I don't even know where to begin, but I'm just kind of glad that we weren't so fixated on it that we wasted a lot of brain cells. It, you know, for the most part, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time because, you know, if you're not going to listen to each other, what's the point? And people aren't listening to each other. So why even bother? Why even bother with the charade? You know, this we didn't have a trial. It wasn't an impeachment trial. It basically was going through the motions. But when it actually came to the point of, okay, so this guy can tell you what happened. He was there. No, we're not going to listen. We're not going to have witnesses. And it's ridiculous. We can have witnesses from all different sides. We can have witnesses saying that, you know, Trump wasn't even there. He was on the golf course. We can have people saying all kinds of different things. But listen to them. Let them speak. Figure out who's lying and who isn't. Have a trial. But we didn't. Wasn't a trial. I don't know what it was. It was a big waste of time. But, you know, if you get to the point where you impeach the guy, you have to have a trial. That's kind of what it says. And we didn't do that because we're so fixated on just being opposed to the other side. And that's sad, because when you stop listening, you stop learning, you stop progressing. And that's where we are now, you know, where we're just deadlocked. And no matter what happens in November, no matter what side wins, that deadlock is still going to be there. So we need to start talking to each other, or we're not going to get anywhere. Iowa, what did you think of Iowa, Kyle?
Yeah, I thought we wouldn't be hearing much more about Iowa, but apparently I was dead wrong in that department.
Honestly, I love it. I love chaos and mayhem. And who thought that counting the votes involves apps and companies called Shadow and all this weirdness and craziness? And yeah, you know, we can call it out no matter what side it's on, but this is just weird. Why doesn't everybody use the same way of counting votes? Someone explain it to me. Why do you need a company that has written an app to do something that we've done before, and a company that supposedly works for progressive issues? Well, counting votes isn't a progressive issue. It's an issue. We should all be using the same thing, and, you know, something that actually has been proven to work. This clearly wasn't proven to work, and it didn't. And now we're all kind of freaking out over it. Although, to be honest, the fact that we don't know what a select group of people in the Wonder Bread state of Iowa get to say about who the Democratic candidate will be, the fact that we don't know that, and that we haven't kicked out people from the race based on that sliver of society, why are we upset at this? Why do we give Iowa so much power in the first place? They don't represent the entire country. They represent Iowa. And great. But, you know, there's other states, there's other kinds of people. And it just seems like by the time it gets to us here in New York or your state in Washington, so much has already been decided. You know, so much is already finished. Cory Booker's out of the race. I never got a chance to say anything about that. Just people in far-flung parts of the country. It's an antiquated system. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And anything that shows how ridiculous it is, to me, is a good thing.
I am with you on that. I think that it's so bizarre that, I mean, can't software just be boring and reliable? And why is it that apps have to either not work at all or work so well that they're terrifying? There's like no just kind of boring, reliable, just sturdy. It's just crazy to me that is that's the specter that we're dealing with. And just as you said, something simple like counting.
I mean, it was more than that, obviously. They had to input things, but it was just ill-advised. And, you know, if you ask us, and you really should ask us, because we've been dealing with this kind of thing for a long time, depending on apps for something vital like that, maybe not the best move. Maybe you need to have a backup system in case it fails. And that's something, you know, we noticed that when we were in Canada. They have backup systems. For instance, payphones. We talk about this all the time. Cell networks go down, and sometimes it's good to have another infrastructure there in case you need it. And we just decide to get rid of them all and go with a different technology. And then when that technology fails, we're kind of left hanging. Kind of what happened here. You know, you gave up the old way of doing things and relied on this unproven app. Here's something, though. Department of Homeland Security said it offered to test the app. Chad Wolf, acting secretary of DHS, said the agency's cybersecurity arm had offered to test the app used by the Iowa Democratic Party for Monday's caucus from a hacking perspective. But that party officials declined, because DHS knows all about hacking. Mr. Wolf says they declined, and so we're seeing a couple of issues with it. Kind of a dick thing to say, Chad. It's not because of hacking, necessarily, that this thing failed in the first place. As you said later on, it's more of a stress and a load issue right now. So, you know, saying, can this thing be hacked or not, that's a good test to run. But because they turned down your offer doesn't mean that's the reason why. He's being all huffy about it. It's just ill-advised to depend on something new, unproven, and not have backup systems.
Yeah, they may well have been better served by calling it a beta test or some kind of new rollout, but we're not at all relying on it. You know, in other words, this is something that we want to test in Iowa under this kind of load to stress test it. And from the party perspective, get a sense of how it might perform elsewhere. But they kind of just sprung it on people. And from what I read, some of the stories, there wasn't even really adequate training around it. It was just sort of a method that was pointed to, but not, it wasn't something that was trained for. It kind of like the 737 Max or something, you know?
Yeah, all I got to say is Democrats have to learn to be smarter. Because listen to this. This is a story just came out in the New York Times. The faulty smartphone app behind the chaotic aftermath of Iowa's Democratic caucuses was the work of a little-known company called Shadow Inc. that was founded by veterans of Hillary Clinton's unsuccessful presidential campaign and whose previous work was marked by a string of failures, including a near bankruptcy. That's the road you decided to go down? I mean, come on. You might as well have gotten Anonymous themselves to do this for you, or Legion of Doom, or somebody that wouldn't have had such a black mark next to their name.
That deserves a really strong, slow clap.
Why are we injecting Hillary Clinton into anything? It's just such a stupid move. It never can work. So whether it's hearing what she has to say about Bernie Sanders or using some kind of technical app that is in any way affiliated with her, it just seems like a bad move, even if it works perfectly. Anyway, the app grew out of a broader push by Democrats, backed by tens of millions of dollars in donor money, get this, to match the Republicans' prowess in digital advertising and organizing after the 2016 election. The Republicans are ahead of Democrats, technically? What have you been doing? Much of the energy and investment have gone into enterprises that are intended to both boost the Democrats' digital game and turn a profit, like Shadow. Yet instead of showcasing how far the Democrats had come since the 2016 defeat, the disarray surrounding the Iowa caucuses raised new questions about how the party hopes to compete in 2020 with the Trump campaign, which is defined as a digital juggernaut that is churning out ads and raising record sums of money. But you don't have to be, you know, a computer nerd to raise money and make advertising. Focusing on the issues and maybe being a little louder and a little bit more in people's faces, being out there like the Trump people are, maybe we can learn something from that. It's something that it's so frustrating to see them failing over and over again in the same ways. Ask us, for God's sake, come up and say, is this a good idea? We'll tell you it's not. It's a bad idea, and here's why it's a bad idea.
Yeah, somehow our invitations get lost, or
they
no
always
one's,
are.
No one's ever curious what we think, and here we are talking about it constantly.
Constantly. So it's crazy though to see Trump claiming that somehow this proves that Democrats are incompetent, as if the candidates themselves had designed this. And then get this, he goes on to say that his caucus was a blowout, that he was incredibly victorious, getting nearly 100% of the vote. You weren't running against anybody. It was unopposed. And I would much rather have the sheer loopiness of Democrats and misaligned apps than the scary dictatorship of a single candidate with no opposition. And then having it be declared a victory somehow. That's North Korean tactics, right? Hey, you know what? That's what he learned. That's what he learned in those talks with Kim.
It is. It's textbook authoritarianism when you say you had such and such percent and it's like slightly less than 100 just to give the like inkling of a bit of a competition, even though there was never, ever any competition.
Yeah, and where there is competition, the Republican Party is shutting it down. So if somebody says, you know what, I'm a Republican, I'm going to run against Trump, all of a sudden the RNC steps in and says, you know, we're not going to have a primary in this state this year. And that's it. That's how it's working in the United States in what year is this, 2020? Wow.
Yeah.
Came earlier than I thought. So, yeah, it's good to get away from this every now and then and go up to the far north and just hang out on the ice.
Well, cults never talk about the other cults, right? It's pretty much about their cult.
You know what? You're right. When I was with the Reverend Sun Yun Moon, we never talked about Scientology. And then when I was with Scientology after that, we never talked about David Koresh.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. There's sort of like this kind of informal respect.
It's like inter-cult outreach or the lack thereof, right?
Yeah. And then the Manson family, actually, they kind of broke some of the rules. But yeah, it's this unwritten way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are ready for our next feature. And that, of course, is Films of the Year That Was, our feature as we plod through all the Academy Award-winning films ever. And we started in 1929, and now we're up to 1967. Boy, we've been at this a while.
Yeah.
And this week, we managed to see a foreign film from Czechoslovakia. Came out in 1967, called Closely Watched Trains. What do you think of that one, Kyle?
It was all about sort of love and love interests and sexual prowess and of course war. Yes, war and trains.
A lot of trains.
And it was in black and white. That's worth mentioning.
Well, Czechoslovakia was in black and white in the 60s up until 1968. That's when they tried color, and then the Soviet tanks came in.
I don't know a lot about that, but sure.
That's how I learned it in school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. School's good. But yeah, what else? Should we recap the story? Or yeah, it's basically, I don't know. What do you want to say?
I have the advantage of looking at the Wikipedia page right now. And it's...
oh, good. That's not cheating.
The young Milos... I don't know how to pronounce HRMA. How do you pronounce that word? His last name doesn't come into the story, so it doesn't really matter. He basically speaks with misplaced pride of his family of misfits and malingerers.
Malingerers.
That's a good word.
That is a good word.
He's engaged as a newly trained station guard in a small railway station during the Second World War and the German occupation of Czechoslovakia. It's amazing how many people worked at this station. He was a guard, but the guy who seemed to live there with his wife was the station manager. And then there was a dispatcher. That was the guy who was always hitting on all the women.
And the telegraphist.
And yeah, there was a woman there who sent telegraphs, I guess, to trains and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all these trains kept coming by, and they were mostly heading to the front. They were controlled by Germans.
Carrying military equipment.
And they had to be closely watched to make sure they made it through the station okay.
Yeah, yeah. What else? They had a general or sort of a leader, a local representative of the Reich,
Right.
And he showed
up. The counselor,
I think. Yes, yes. And he was sort of the party representation and would check on the station. And they rolled in on a car that had rails, or that would ride on the rails, which was kind of interesting. And then back up. And there was no steering wheel in the car. That was kind of funny.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I see his car just suddenly pull up on the rails.
Yep.
And this Nazi guy get out and just basically bark all kinds of propaganda things at the people at the station.
Yeah.
And then he comes back at a pivotal point in the film because this is really weird. And not what you would expect for an Iron Curtain country in the mid-60s. But basically there was an incident with the dispatcher, the guy who was hitting on all the women, because he has a scene where he's stamping the buttocks of the telegraph woman. Which is a lot more than an American film would do at that point in time. And that the telegraph woman's mother saw this, was outraged by it, and basically pressed the issue
and reported it.
She even stormed into court once, where a guy was confessing to murder, interrupted him and said, "Judge, look at my daughter's buttocks. Look, somebody stamped this." And of course, the judge comes down to get a closer look. It's really hilarious. But they basically succeeded in having a hearing at the station. That little car with the Nazi guy pulled up on the rails, and they came into the station to have a hearing about this.
Because she had escalated.
And this was at a pivotal point in the film because there was this munition train. Oh, did we mention they're part of the resistance too?
Yes.
These people at the station? Not the station master, but other people.
No, that's crucial. We did not mention
that. And they were supposed to blow up the train as it went through. And we won't spoil it for you, but basically everything fell on the kid that was just hired.
The sort of apprentice signalman.
So that's Closely Watched Trains from 1967, our foreign film of the Academy Awards. And we're going to shut it down here and say that next week, or actually we're not going to be on next week, I understand, I think there's a game. But whenever we're on next, we will tackle the domestic 1967 film.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, we won't leak what that is,
but I'm
sure people can look that up.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number, if there is anybody out there who wants to give us a call, 631-632-WEUSB, 631-632-9872. Results should be trickling in about now, I think, because I think I finally figured out a way to read the app or to go around the app or something like that. I do know... in Nevada, they've abandoned that app. They're not going to use it.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. I still don't get why different parties have to use different apps or different ways of simply counting votes. Someone explain that to me. It makes no sense.
This is my theory. It's like picking coffee vendors. It's just like they have an account. They decide on, okay, this vendor is going to handle this thing. But again... if it's unknown, they should have tried it. They should have just done like a soft test during this and not had it be the primary mode.
We have a phone call. Good evening.
Hello?
Yes, you're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm in Suffolk County. I'm in Brentwood. I'm actually a long-time caller with you guys. Anyway, I'm just announcing there's a regular monthly police meeting at the 3rd Precinct. That's in Bayshore at the border of Brentwood.
A police meeting?
A monthly community meeting.
I see. Okay. And what, you
because
talk to
something
cops?
Happened just in general, and they try to do a good job, and not necessarily everyone there is always my best friend, and that's just not how it works.
They try
to do a good job and be there for the community.
Is something in particular bothering you these days that is of particular concern in the area, or is it just a regular...
Well, there. You know, in Brentwood, we know of, but just in general, I'm not complaining. I'm just letting the community know.
Okay, so how do people get to this meeting?
They go down Fifth Avenue to the 2nd Precinct. I'm sorry, not the 2nd. It's the 3rd Precinct of Suffolk County.
And what time?
So go on to scpd.org.
Okay.
But it is at 7 tonight, so it's in minutes.
Well, you better hurry up. Wow. So
I'm heading.
You're going to be there, right?
Yeah, I don't always go. I usually go.
So, okay, what kind of person would go to this meeting?
All kinds of people from the community, people that have problems in the neighborhood. They want to complain or get help or get something investigated. people that are trying. Used to be legislator Steve Flatteron would go. Some of the higher ups in the precinct, sometimes in the county. Police department. Others, special guests.
What if you had a problem with the police? Is that the meeting for you to go to?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you cleared that up. All right, so people, turn your cars around now, because if you're on your way down there to complain, that's not the right meeting for you.
No, this is not the place to deal with that. Not at all. And that's not what it's about.
It's about complaining about other people.
Yeah, this sounds like coffee with cops, like one of those type of outreach things, but this is more formal, I gather.
Some of that.
Well, you're having their
things,
coffee.
And they're trying to maybe do what they can to make the community a little better. I think there are other things they could try and do that we all kind of might be aware of. But
well, let's
I'm not going to go feed that either. That's not positive for why I'm calling to let the community.
Can we just do a little role playing here? Let's say you're at the meeting right now, and I'm a cop at the meeting, and I say, "Hello, citizen. How can we help you? Give us one suggestion."
People say I notice a situation on an intersection, or you know, I've been to many of these meetings. I've seen a lot of this. One guy said I'm having a problem with a house that doesn't look like they belong there.
You mean people in the house?
Actually, here's another one. There's a I believe they're Eastern, without generalizing or nationalizing.
Eastern
people that have a. Like a deli in Central Islip, and they have a problem with gangs hanging out in the parking lot for years, and it's ruining their business. And it's hard to go to the gang and say, you need to get out of here because you can get hurt or worse.
Right.
So the police have stepped it up a little, and it's a little better. But it took years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, well,
and these, I will say, these foreigners that sometimes people want to label, oh, they're Arabs or they're this or that, have been so professional and patient and restrained, unlike the media here sometimes will portray them. So I
and some politicians as well.
Yeah.
So definitely the lesson is speak up and try as much as you can to be active and participate in the process, because there is mechanisms for that, and make your concerns known. And this sounds like a great opportunity for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for letting us know about that, and let us know how it goes.
Great. I'll talk to you.
All right. Take care. Our phone number again, 631-632-9872, and our email address, otw@2600.com. Yeah, you know, I'm a little uneasy going to the precinct and having a meeting there. It'd be kind of nicer if, you know, you got to meet them and talk to them in your neighborhood, and you can show them this is you know, good, this is bad.
Okay. So coffee with cops, that's one thing. But what about pizza with police?
Pizza with police?
Yeah.
Well, okay, you'd have to go to the right pizza place, first of all.
Yeah, bad pizza.
That can get contentious right away. So
that's like almost a religious
thing. If you can agree on this is a good place and this is where we're going to go, yeah, it could work. It could. Absolutely. I like to see dialogue. I like to see open-minded people. And I like to see people not generalize. That's, you know, I was a little worried when he was talking about certain...
No, but they were
elements.
They were the owners. They're like immigrant owners of a deli, and I understand what he's saying. That, you know, there's some aspect of the parking lot that's attracting unsavory types or whatever other labels you want to throw around. But that, you know, could be an issue.
Why are people attracted to parking lots? I don't get that. I've never had fun in a parking lot. Why do people hang out all day long in a parking lot? What do?
I don't know. Show off your cars.
I'm going to go and I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask them, what do you guys do all day? I'm just hanging out in this parking lot? You know, show me. I'll get back to everybody on this.
Maybe they're distributing information.
Well, anyway, so I'm seeing Pete Buttigieg might be a little bit ahead. You know what I like about this whole Iowa fiasco? First of all, look at the headlines. What the redacted is going on in Iowa? The delayed Iowa caucus results erode trust in elections at a really bad time. Iowa caucus debacle is one of the most stunning tech failures ever. the app that broke the Iowa caucus. It's just, I like seeing things crumble sometimes.
Endless headlines for that. You could just keep going with all kinds of sensational or anti-sensational.
But what you see through all this is how people react. You see people like Trump, for instance, trying to somehow raise conspiracies and just make it so that this is all part of the incompetence of the Democratic Party.
I think it's
incompetence, all right, but it's not from the party. It's just people who accept technology without question.
I think the phrase he used was sloppiest train wreck ever. And frankly, I don't think so. I mean, let's look up some train wrecks. There's actual trains that have had problems, and I think that this isn't quite that bad.
Yeah. And what, do you want a neat train wreck? I'm not exactly sure. A train wreck is a train wreck.
Yeah, they're all sloppy.
But you see how the candidates themselves are treating this. You see Buttigieg last night giving a victory speech before he had any victory. He was basically just saying, yeah, I'm going to ignore the facts. I'm just going to say this. I wrote the damn speech. I'm going to give the speech. And I probably won, so I'm going to do this. You had Yang, who just left because apparently he had an unrefundable plane ticket to New Hampshire, so he had to get on that plane. You had Biden basically saying something's up here, it's suspicious, because the entrance polls apparently showed him lagging way behind. And you had Bernie Sanders using humor, which I thought was great and typical of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, a lot of consternation and defensiveness from Biden and suspicion, which I don't know if it played well, or definitely, as you're pointing out, contrasted.
Name the last thing Joe Biden did that played well.
We
only have 5 minutes, too, by the way.
That's
what I thought.
You see, look, now I'm going to get beat like a drum.
Did he say that, or are you saying that?
I'm saying that.
He says malarkey in words like that.
Malarkey.
Well, it's interesting, and these are interesting times. But you know what? Tonight's the State of the Union address. Usually we'd be spending the whole show talking about that. There was an impeachment trial today, supposedly a trial. It wasn't really a trial. It's just all these things are happening. And you just, there's not enough time to deal with it all. You can't even focus attention on it. It's just constant mayhem and chaos. And I'm quite comfortable with that.
Yeah. I think well suited, well conditioned at this point.
Well, we had a great time going up to Northern Quebec, hanging out with Indigenous people, going to a Native community, not spending nearly enough time up there. But boy, we came back with all kinds of ideas for things to do. And one of the things I really want to see happen is more Indigenous radio. They have it up there. They have Indigenous television. They have something called APTN, Aboriginal People's Television Network. It's got at least two channels. We found an HD channel they have. They're in French. They're in English. They speak Inuktitut. They speak Innu. And basically, it gives people a voice. It gives people an outlet. You can learn about their culture. We don't have that here, not nearly enough. Imagine every cable system having a channel devoted to Indigenous culture in our country. Imagine that. We don't have it. We should. We should have an Indigenous radio program on this station playing Native American music and First Nations and all kinds of things like that. There is so much, thousands and thousands of pieces of music that simply would blow you away. But we close ourselves off, and that's a real shame.
Yeah, and I think the languages are being revived, and we're seeing a lot of that from First Nations communities, and we need to hear more of the stories. I think that knowledge can be really instructive for a lot of the environmental and other movements that people are facing in this country and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We need to draw upon that. That is a part of our history. If you don't know the history, it would be a great way to learn it, to hear from those voices directly.
We're out of time, but we're going to go out with a piece from a tribe called Red, another First Nations band. Yeah. So many sounds, so much to learn, so much to share, and we intend to do as much as we can to bring that to you here at WUSB and elsewhere. We'll be back, if not next week, in 2 weeks. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Tune in to us tomorrow night on Off the Hook, and we will see you when we see you.
Bye-bye, y'all.
want to put the whole lion from them. We can't live in a peace card, the whole of them. Inform of them and them cause problems. Chop it!
Hey kids, Finn with you on Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We're going to be paying some tribute to Andy Gill of the of Gang of Four, in addition to hearing some new music from the Healthy Junkies and a whole bunch of other people. So stay with us right here on as we count votes, WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be right back. Yeah, so exactly. Andy Gill has passed away, and those of you who don't know him, you should, you know. He had a certain rare essence right here, WUSB Stony Brook.
Let her go, get along. Well, I just couldn't let her go. Get along. Yeah, the rock and roll trio featuring Johnny Burnett on vocals, and of course Paul Burleson on guitar there, with the classic "The Train," kept a rolling, covered by many bands and done many ways over the years. And of course, he got that guitar sound back in the days, you know, before they had things like overdrives and fuzz pedals and all these things, by loosening one of the tubes in his amplifier and just getting a buzz because the circuit was not correct. So, yeah, so the train kept it rolling. So hats off to the great Johnny, the great Paul Burleson, and also the great Johnny Burnett, naturally. The Bell Curves are playing this Saturday night coming up over at the Velvet Lounge in right here in East Setauket at Stony Brook, and Velvet Lounge right at the corner of Nichols Road and Route 25A, right here, around the corner from the university. And the Bell Curves will be performing live right there, 9 p.m., the Velvet Lounge. Here's something new from the Bell Curves right here, WUSB Stony Brook.